From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today on the show, we get a therapist's advice on how to be resilient as the challenges of the pandemic continue into the new year. Then we look at some of the holiday events happening in Milwaukee, including some old favorites with new twists.
The classic dome experience is still there, but they have created precautions where they're limiting the number of people inside. So you can actually go visit the domes, including actually on holidays.
And we speak with actors and husbands Ben Lewis and Blake Lee, stars of Lifetime's The Christmas Setup, the channel's first holiday film centered on a gay romance set in Milwaukee.
To actually get the call to do it, and then before we, you know it, we're in Canada celebrating Christmas in September, acting alongside each other, and, you know, Fran Drescher is playing my mother. I was like, what did I do? What did I do to deserve this?
Lake Effect is next, but first the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. The COVID-19 pandemic has been a community-wide traumatic event. On top of a health crisis, we're also facing a mental health crisis, as nearly every aspect of our lives is touched by this pandemic. Many of us are ready for the end of 2020. But the new year won't necessarily bring clarity to help us move forward. And with the holidays coming up, there are additional choices and stressors to face. So how can we make sure we're taking care of ourselves as we face a long winter and cases continue to surge? Christine Finnerty is a mental health therapist in Elm Grove, Wisconsin, and she joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to share some advice on how to remain resilient and address some common concerns.
Christine Finnerty, welcome back to Lake Effect. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
Oh, thanks so much for reaching out.
So the end of the year is upon us, and usually it's a time of reflection or setting goals for the next year, but I'm sure there's a big consensus that many of us just want 2020 to be over with. But, you know, despite a calendar change, that doesn't change what we've been dealing with. So do you think most of us just don't realize how much we've been going through these past months, or at least in the way some of the smaller constant things build up and impact us over time?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is yes and no. I think that we do understand, we do feel it. We do know that there has been a buildup because I think we're feeling it. And I think that the areas where we're feeling it is that we're all tired. We're just exhausted, but we're not exhausted in the same ways that we were when you and I had talked, you know, a couple months ago. That was when everything was sort of new and we were trying to figure out how to adjust and how to pivot and how to push into the newness of sort of this COVID way of life. The exhaustion and the lack of motivation and the lethargy that we're feeling now is really as a result of the lack of the time that we've had, the lack of physical connection to other people, that intimate relationship that we have with people. You know, one of the best ways for us to be able to regulate our own stress response to things is to be in the presence of other people. It's so important for us to be able to see other people, to see and to be seen by other people and people who we consider our people. So members of the community, our family members, coworkers, classmates, teammates. The lethargy that we're experiencing is a symptom of not being in the physical presence of others. And it's a different kind of low that my clients have been coming into the office with. It's a different low than a physical or emotional low. It really is that lack of the intrinsic need to be physically connected to other people.
Right. And, you know, what have you been hearing or dealing with the most in your practice with listening to your clients going through struggles of 2020? You know, do you have any top concerns of what this time has done to us?
You know, I think it does circle back to that need for connection to one another. And so the answer to this is sort of twofold. We're experiencing that lack of connection to other people. We need that connection. We need that hug, that laugh, that shoulder to lean on, that handshake, just to be able to sit with someone and to spend some physical time in their presence is something we're really yearning for. But at the same time, you know, we have technology that we've really been leaning into and taking advantage of. And it's great for things like this, this interview, or look at how the school systems are operating right now. It has been wonderful. But at the same time, our lack of physical connection with one another and our over-reliance on technology to fill that space has really created a new sense of anxiety and a dip in confidence in our ability to be able to connect face-to-face and interpersonally with one another again.
We're craving normalcy, of course, and especially as the holidays come up, we may be craving that normalcy more than ever. But, you know, of course, in a time where safety often takes family gatherings out of the equation, you know, do you think this is a time where we just crave it more than ever and that impacts how we kind of go about day to day or our mindset?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, the holidays are a time, you know, of tradition. And I think that when we think about the holidays, we think about what those traditions are for us. And usually it means a gathering of people, a celebration of some kind, coming together to share a meal. And, you know, religiously and culturally, traditions mean a lot to all of us. And so as such, this really is a time that we want to be able to connect with one another. It's also a time that we're having to really reevaluate what's best for us individually and how do we balance that with what the expectation is of our family tradition. Do we gather with everyone else? Am I the only one who isn't going to want to participate, or do I show up and I'm the only one with a mask? So I do think now is a time that we do want to get together even more, and the pressure of the holidays is about us getting together. But it is definitely looking a little bit different. And I think that's a struggle, a really very valid struggle that people are having. How do I have the discussion with other people in my family who have different philosophies of how to gather this year?
Right. And that can build up and just create a lot of anxiety, not in just decision making, but in a lot of things. So we might feel like, hey, I don't even want to do the normal activities. And is that okay too?
Absolutely. I think that this is the time everyone gets a pass. If ever there was a time that you could do things differently, this is the time. So I have a couple examples that are really perfect, because I talked to a neighbor who has grown kids, and I saw her in the backyard on Thanksgiving, and I said, what are you guys doing? How are you doing today? And she said, this is the first year that I haven't had to prepare and cook. And not that it's a bad thing, I have loved it, but I get to go to my daughter's house and show up with a pie, and she's doing everything. And it was a very small gathering, just the four of them, and they were protecting themselves. And she said, it feels good. I didn't know how I was going to feel not having all of my kids at my house, but it really felt nice to be able to gather with one of her kids and their family. And then the next day they were going to spend some time with another one of the kids. And for them, it really worked out nicely. And she had shared that she talked to a couple other people, a couple other friends who had said, you know, it really has been nice to sort of do things a little bit differently and take a break where you need to. Also in my family, I realized this year, my kids shared with me for the first time that they don't necessarily love all of the food, the side dishes that I put out for Thanksgiving. And they love the tradition of being together with the whole family. But this year, since we weren't doing that, they asked if we were really going to be having all those side dishes. And I said, of course, that's what we always do. And they weren't into it as much as I wanted them to be. And after that initial conversation and some hurt feelings of, wait, this is the way we've always done it, don't you want to stay that way? I thought, all right, well, how do I get them to buy into this? So I said, okay, if you all don't like those side dishes, then why don't you come up with a dish that you do want? And how about if you make it, or I can help you make it? And so that's what we did. And it was a perfectly imperfect Thanksgiving. I made everything I wanted to make, and they contributed what they wanted to contribute to. And they felt, I guess they bought into it a little bit more because they were able to contribute in a way they wanted to. And I have to be honest, one of the meals was, my oldest wanted mac and cheese, homemade mac and cheese. We had never done it before. And he made it, and it was a smash hit. Everybody loved it. The five of us in my family, everybody loved it. And I thought, okay, well, I gained something from this. I know it doesn't look like the tradition that I thought we'd have on the table, but from this point forward, he loved it. And that's what I want. I want them to be happy. That's what makes the tradition so valuable for me. So I think that we've learned how to change things moving forward.
Yeah, it sounds like a good kind of healthy compromise. This is just like one example of coping and making the best of what we're going through. What are some other healthy coping mechanisms we can use, you know, especially as winter is upon us? Like, we don't have snow quite yet, but it's getting colder. Cases are surging. We need to get through a difficult winter.
Yeah, we certainly do. Well, you know, as we talked about before, those same mechanisms are important. So really making sure that we're paying attention to self-care, putting yourself and your family first, and learning to be able to stand up to, like I had said, difference of family philosophies of how to gather and where to gather and in what way you can gather. Being really true to being able to say this works for us. This is what is best for us and in our family, and letting the pressure of everything else go. I'm sorry, we can't gather. This is what's best for us. Or we're going to show up, but we'll be there for a short period of time. We're all going to wear masks, and this is what is working for us. So really being able to be an advocate for what works best for you individually is going to be really important. And at the same time, you want to make sure that you're working your best at staying self-regulated. And so through that, we need to make sure that we're doing the things that we've talked about before, which is proper sleep and exercise, and in particular, schedules and structure, and making sure that we do follow some type of external structure. When we have external structures, it leads to predictability, and that predictability provides a sense of safety and security for us. And so this is really the importance. I know sometimes it's hard to create a schedule and to stick to it, but really what we're doing is we're creating a constant. We're creating something we can control in a time of unpredictability when we feel like things are out of control.
Something that a lot of people have been struggling with as we are making our schedules at home or working from home, living in this new world we're in, is our levels of productivity. You know, so with everything going on, it's hard to be as productive as we once were or think we should be. You know, there's a lot of pressure in, well, I should be getting this done. And that can impact self-worth a lot. So how would you recommend viewing our individual levels of productivity in a different light?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, because I did have a client who came in with the exact same concern this week. And she just said, you know, I'm feeling like I just can't perform 100% in all of the areas that I want to be able to. I think one of the things that has happened is mentally, we have all stayed where we were pre-COVID, and we're not necessarily taking into consideration how much everyone, the whole world, has changed. And so we're still expecting that we need to be able to perform our work duties, our home duties, our parental duties, being good to ourselves. We're trying to do that as well as we did before, but right now we're balancing so many more things. But we also have to understand, so is everyone else. So I have talked to a lot of students who have been coming in, and they're concerned. You know, I'm in high school. I'm supposed to be preparing for college. I don't, you know, what are they going to say about ACT tests when I haven't been able to get into an ACT test? And I'm so concerned that with COVID, you know, there have been lapses in academic support that where they've normally needed it. And I think they don't understand. The colleges who are accepting them have gone through COVID too. The bosses you're reporting to have gone through COVID too. The families that you're living with are going through the exact same situation. We all have to adjust our level of expectation to meet what is best for us. As long as you repeat the mantra, am I being who I need to be for me, you will be able to perform the best for other people. You have to put yourself first. It's really got to be first on everyone's list right now of priorities. Give yourself a break. Understand that you're doing the best you can in a completely new environment.
Right. And putting ourselves first kind of goes along the lines of, you know, the phrase, be kind to yourself. But sometimes I feel like that can be used in a dismissive way. So how can we balance like being kinder to ourselves while also recognizing when we reach a point where, you know, we can't dismiss behaviors or patterns, and maybe we do need some extra help or extra support.
So I always say the rule of thumb here is really look at 2 weeks. So depth and duration. Are you able to stay regulated for a period of 2 weeks? And what I mean by staying regulated is maintaining a sense of calm and balance for your well-being. So are you able to stay regulated for a period of 2 weeks or more? And if you are not, is this starting to impact your daily life or your daily routine? If you find that for a period of 2 weeks or more, you are not able to get through your daily life and your routine has been disrupted and you're not wanting to get out of bed, you're not wanting to go to work, and you're finding your grades are falling behind, you're not reaching out to people as much as you were, don't be afraid to call someone like myself. And likewise, if you notice in someone else that they have changed and you acknowledge that change, reach out to them and acknowledge, I see a change. I notice a change in your behavior or the way that you're interacting at work or the fact that you haven't called in a couple of days. Are you okay? And you can always call a counselor and ask for advice. You don't have to make an appointment to come in. You can ask for advice for yourself. You can ask for advice for someone else. And we're here to help right now, particularly more than ever. We've united with our clients and we understand this is the first time I think in my life, certainly, and I think in many people's lives, where counselors and clients are going through the exact same stressors at the exact same time. So we certainly do understand that sometimes we just need some advice for how to get through that day or a particular period of time.
That's definitely a good thing to keep in mind. And Christine Finnerty, I want to thank you so much for joining us again and sharing your insights.
Oh, thank you so much.
Christine Finnerty is a mental health therapist in Elm Grove, Wisconsin, and she spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski. Coming up, we'll look at some of the best holiday events happening in Milwaukee this month. That's when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee's NPR. Listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. The holiday season is here, and although this year looks a little different, there are still a lot of ways to celebrate the season here in Milwaukee. Since the COVID-19 pandemic began, Adam Carr from the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service has joined us to talk about some of the community events happening here in Milwaukee. The list includes a wide array of things to enjoy both virtually and in person. Adam Carr, thank you so much for joining us once again here on Lake Effect.
Absolutely. Thanks, Joy.
This is really the last time we'll be speaking in 2020, which I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, a new year, new things to explore, right?
Absolutely. When we first started remotely speaking to each other for this segment about remote community events in North and Southside neighborhoods in Milwaukee, we thought that might be a temporary thing, but we're locked in now.
All right. So we have a lot of events that I think people will be familiar with some of the spaces, but new things happening in different places. This first one, though, is an old favorite for many Milwaukeeans.
Absolutely. I live a few blocks from the Mitchell Park domes, and sometimes I need to be reminded that they're there, not that I always see them, but that you can go inside. And actually, during the pandemic, they've created a system where you can sign up for times to go and visit the domes. So kind of the classic dome experience is still there, but they have created precautions where they're limiting the number of people inside. So you can actually go visit the domes. And I bet a lot of listeners might not think of that, including actually on holidays. So my family went there for Christmas last year. So it's a great place to go for holidays. Plus, on Saturdays from 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., they're continuing the tradition of doing the Milwaukee Winter Farmers Market at the Dome. Just looking at the vendors, they're gathering 30 local vendors each week, and those actually rotate. So every time you go, it's a little bit different. From all over southeastern Wisconsin, but also some great folks in Milwaukee are part of that. And they absolutely, just reviewed all of their pandemic protocols. They're taking it very seriously, but you can actually go and shop in person. So that's kind of a two for one in this one, which is the domes are open. You got to sign up for a specific time. So you could do that through their website. Then also the Milwaukee Winters Farmers Market, which is at the annex, the greenhouse segment of the domes, every Saturday from 8:30 to 12:30 p.m.
A great way to support local businesses. And this next venue, I don't know if venue is quite the right word, but this next space is also a great place to support local businesses.
Absolutely. So the Sherman Phoenix is this, you know, this remarkable building in the city of Milwaukee, a former BMO Harris Bank, but today it's this hub of Black-owned business in Milwaukee in the Sherman Park neighborhood. I was just kind of reviewing this. It's only the third Christmas for the Sherman Phoenix. For me, it's become part of the fabric of the city already, but it's still a pretty young project. Its two newest tenants are great places to check out and also probably to get some holiday shopping done. The Underground Makers Market, which is a collection of different small businesses and entrepreneurs, as well as the Kuji Chagalia Producers Cooperative. There are two new spaces inside of the Sherman Phoenix that you can go check out. They have open hours. They limit the number of clients that can come in, but I've been by both spaces, and they have each of them has a collection of all these different local brands, different local products, different local, especially in the Kuji Chagalia Producers Cooperative, they have, you know, body products, they have hot sauce, they have art, all different kinds of things. So the Sherman Phoenix, it's a great time to go there any time of year, but particularly during the holidays, you can check out two of the new tenants and some of the, your favorites.
We've talked a lot about Sherman Phoenix, but for people who haven't been to this space, what are some of the other places that you can explore there?
Absolutely. I think probably the easiest thing to do right now is I have a handful of great places to eat. So Funky Fresh Spring Rolls, the Rise and Grind Cafe, Sauce and Spice Pizza, Wing Boss. So there's a number of locally owned restaurants you can check out there. You know, during normal times, there's also groups that do wellness there. So there's kind of like a yoga studio and workout space. There's other spaces that I think are a little bit quieter during this period because, you know, they can't have their normal operations. But yeah, I would highly suggest too going to the Sherman Phoenix website. You can check out a little bit of their offerings. Like they have a jeweler, they have a barber shop and a beauty shop, but I would highly, yeah, again, check the website to see what's currently open.
It's always changing.
Absolutely.
So this next event, you actually mentioned you think this would be particularly up my alley, and it's actually not that far away from me, a space that I love, Latino Arts, doing an art show.
Absolutely. Not all of your listeners might know, but I know from knowing Joy a little bit that she's an artist in her own right, and I always like seeing Joy's art because it feels really like from her, and that's why I thought you'd like the show, Joy. Los Rostros Ocultos at Latino Arts. It's an art exhibit that's actually, it's open now. It's also called Hidden Faces. It's by an artist from California named Angelica Contreras. And her art, you know, I'm looking at it right now. It's very dense and packed with imagery. It's kind of, there's kind of a darkness to them, but they're also inspired kind of like by pop culture imagery. They're portraits. They're the kind of images that make you want to get up and look closer. Like literally right now I'm looking at some of her images on my computer screen and I kind of want to like put my eyes right against the screen to make out every little detail. So in her own words, she explores the relationships between tradition, identity, and pop culture. And she grew up across the United States and Mexico. So I think in a lot of ways, this is an exhibit, obviously from an artist who isn't from Milwaukee, but I think it definitely will find itself at home in some of the cultural dialogues we have going here in Milwaukee.
Is this an exhibit that people will be largely visiting in person, or is it something that you can also experience digitally?
That is a great question. So I know that you'll be able to see some of it digitally, but they do have open gallery hours until February 19th. So they opened on December 4th and then going till February 19th. And what you can do is actually go to Latino Art, their website. They have an Eventbrite where you can sign up for their open gallery hours. You do actually have to, normally you can just show up when they have their open hours and check it out. You can visit for free, so you don't have to pay an admission, but they are asking you to sign up for an increment of time so you can go and make sure that you're not, so they're keeping the number of guests in the gallery limited.
So if you're someone who is abstaining from really going out right now, the next couple of items may be right up your alley. This next one is, interestingly, both a holiday event, but also scary?
Yeah, so there's this performing arts collective in Milwaukee named Herdspace, H-E-A-R-D. It's a multimedia performance art collective led by women of color. And I have a couple friends that participate in their events, are part of that collective, and they have been doing holiday shows, and this will be their third annual holiday show. But this year, their show is called A Very Scary Kind of Show. So I guess last year they put on fancy outfits and reflected on 2019 and celebrated the new year. But this year, they're sort of interpreting the holidays. They're doing a kind of a Friendsgiving thing, but they're also, they want to do some scary storytelling and exploring supernatural occurrences. So Herdspace's A Very Scary Kind of Show is happening on Friday, December 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. And, you know, I think, you know, for some of us, the holidays, you know, you might go to like Bing Crosby or, you know, the Motown, you know, Christmas record or something classic like that. But for other folks, it takes them into different spaces. So I'm really interested to hear how their approach to holidays was interpreted into a scary show of storytelling. So I'm interested where that's going to go.
It does seem quintessentially 2020 to have a holiday show that is also maybe terrifying.
Absolutely. It's definitely appropriate. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do.
So for perhaps a more classic kind of holiday celebration, we turn next to the Wisconsin Black Historical Society.
So yes, the Wisconsin Black Historical Society has been celebrating Kwanzaa as long as it's been around. So this year will be the 32nd celebration that Wisconsin Black Historical Society does. The proprietor there, Claiborne Benson, I couldn't have more respect for someone of just being sort of a pillar in the community and that space and all the different events that he does there, the community that he welcomes into his space it's just such an invaluable part of the overall Milwaukee picture. And the Kwanzaa celebration has been happening again. Yeah, this will be the 32nd year that they do it. Just last year, my colleague Demia Causey wrote a piece where she did an interview with Claiborne. You know, he said the first year when he was a new thing, there were about 10 to 12 people at their first celebration. But over time, the entire space is packed with hundreds of people. So this has become kind of a staple within the Black community in Milwaukee and just a time to be together and kick off Kwanzaa together. And, you know, this year, obviously, it's not happening in person, but literally just, you know, within 24 hours of us scheduling this interview, they announced that they're going to be doing December 26th at 6 p.m. their virtual celebration. So I think, you know, all of us have kind of struggled to keep traditions, keep connection, find ways to engage in community. And I think it warms my heart to know that Claiborne and the Wisconsin Black Historical Society are keeping this tradition going.
A lot of great events to wrap up the year that has been 2020. I look forward to chatting with you in the new year.
And I will say next December, when I come on to represent Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service, I'm so excited for all the different things that I'm going to invite your listeners to be able to go to and feel both cold and warm together with other Milwaukeeans. That's so I think by the end of next year, we can safely say we're going to be able to have some of our holiday traditions back.
Let's hope, yeah.
Yeah, maybe I just jinxed it, so I'll see you in January.
Adam Carr is the deputy editor for community engagement at the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. You can find more of our conversations with them about Milwaukee's Central City neighborhoods at WUWM.com. After the break, we speak with actors and real-life husbands Ben Lewis and Blake Lee. They're starring in Lifetime's The Christmas Setup, a holiday romance set here in Milwaukee. That's when Lake Effect returns in just a moment on WUWM. Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. For many people, TV Christmas movies are an essential part of the holiday season. This year, Lifetime will air 30 new Christmas films, and among them will be the network's first ever holiday film centered on an LGBTQ+ lead storyline. The Christmas Setup stars married couple Ben Lewis and Blake Lee, and follows Hugo, played by Lewis, as he goes home to Milwaukee for the holidays. His mom, Kate, hopes to play matchmaker, and is played by none other than Fran Drescher. While home, Hugo reunites with his high school friend and past crush, Patrick, played by Lee, to explore the possibility of igniting a new romance. To get more insight into this momentous depiction of gay romance, Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski spoke with the stars of the film. Ben Lewis and Blake Lee star in Lifetime's The Christmas Setup, the network's first film centered on a gay romance, which is also set in Milwaukee. The film premieres on December 12th, and Lewis and Lee spoke with Audrey Nowakowski.
Ben Lewis and Blake Lee, welcome to Lake Effect. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you for having us.
Speaking with you.
So you both are starring in Lifetime's The Christmas Setup, and this is Lifetime's first movie centered around a gay romance. So what did that mean for the two of you?
Well, for me, it meant the opportunity to work with Blake for the first time, which was really exciting. I mean, we've been together for 10 years and never had this opportunity before, never expected to, you know, be given this opportunity. So it was very exciting. Also, you know, obviously, like everybody, we were in the middle of COVID, and I think the walls of our house were starting to close in at that point. And so just to be able to get out of the house and get back to work. And
we felt very lucky to be able to go. And we shot the movie in Canada. So it was a really nice escape because there were so few cases there. So, I mean, everyone still took all the, you know, there were so many precautions that had to be taken, but it was so much safer. There was such a sense of relief to be like, oh my God, we have this time to kind of just focus on the work.
Also, my family is in Canada. They're in Toronto, and we actually, we shot the movie in Ottawa, but we got to quarantine for 2 weeks up at my family's cabin in Muskoka, which is like cottage country there. So that was, it was pretty, really nice. Pretty lovely.
But we also felt so much of, it being the first LGBTQ+ storyline as like a leading storyline in a Lifetime film, we felt really lucky and privileged to be the people that were asked to do it. I think the weight of that has hit us more now as we're promoting the film. When we got the job offer, it was more like exciting that we got the offer. And then it was definitely something we did talk about, though. I remember us being like, the fact that it is the first makes us want to do it even more because it is this moment. And to be a part of that, we felt very special. But it's definitely hitting us more now.
Did you both have to audition for it, or was this a project that was offered to you?
No, that was the crazy thing. It's like, it literally came out of the blue. Like, I think we had both read the sort of press release that had come out a couple months earlier when Lifetime announced that they were going to make their first gay Christmas movie. But we didn't really think much of it because, first of all, at that point, we had no idea that they might be looking for a real couple to be in it. And even if they were, you know, we know a lot of gay actor couples. So it definitely wasn't something that we just, assumed or imagined would come to us.
And had you both, I mean, you're both actors and that's how you work. And obviously the pandemic has so greatly affected that. So before this came in, did you kind of accept and write off that, well, for the rest of the year, who knows if it'll work?
For sure. Yeah, we definitely had, I think we were more optimistic and hopeful in the beginning. You know, we're like, this is going to pass soon. And then I think it started around the time that this came in. It was like, okay, like we need to, we bought new outdoor furniture for our house because we were like, we gotta expand the walls of this house somehow because they were starting to close in. So we were spending more time in our backyard. And, you know, we were kind of going, let's just do things that we enjoy. Let's garden. Ben writes a lot. He was writing. I was writing a bit. And we were just trying to find things that we enjoyed so that we could stay sane. And we definitely had gone, you know, this is probably, it's looking like we're not going to go back to work this year. So it was, yeah.
So then to actually, you know, get the call to do it. And then before we, you know it, we're in Canada celebrating Christmas in September. Work, you know, acting alongside each other, and you know, Fran Drescher is playing my mother. I was like, what did I do? What did I do to deserve this?
So you mentioned that this was your first time working together. Was that something that made you both nervous, or did you surprise each other at all through the process of filming this?
I was nervous just because, you know, I think when you when you're working opposite a co-star who you're just meeting, there's a certain level of, you know, just professionalism, mm-hmm. That it's hard to maintain with your partner. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's, we're, you know,
you're when, so comfortable
when you're
with
so
someone,
intimate,
yeah.
You know, if we get on each other's nerves, we know it in like an instant, you know?
You're not afraid to show it, you know? It's like, the emotions are like on your sleeve, you know, we can just tell, yeah, when the other person's mad. And
but when you're in front of an entire crew, you should, you know, you should be able to sort of like exactly keep a lid on it. So you know, I think I was a little bit nervous about that just because it was so unknown. Mm-hmm. But you know, the good thing is being together for 10 years, we've really honed our communication skills. And so if a conflict does arise, we can work through it very quickly before it gets, you know, ugly in front of an entire entire crew.
Yes, which it never did.
Yeah, which it never did.
But no, I think also we felt that was part of the conversation was, is it going to be good for us? And I think we both were like, I think getting out of this house period is good for us. Mm-hmm. And then we were, I think, just, it was instantly such a good experience. We felt, I think after shooting our first or second scene, we looked at each other and we were just like, this is so fun. We can't believe we get to do this for 3 more weeks. And it was this, and then I think from then on, the nerves of it being, you know, is this a bad thing or a good thing for our relationship went away. And it was just, it was such a positive.
And beyond the chemistry that Blake and I have with each other, I mean, we were very lucky that our old friend, Ellen Wong, signed on to play my best friend in the movie. You know, she was actually there the night that Blake and I met, mm-hmm. 10 years ago. And the actor who plays my brother, Chad Connell, I've known him for even longer than that. I've known Pat, the director, I've been wanting to work with him for like 6 years. The only person who we didn't know was Fran, but I think, you know, for anybody who grew up watching The Nanny, which I think is most women and gay men, you feel like you know her, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of people of our generation feel like they grew up with her, and she is just like everything you want her to be and more. So mm-hmm. like, we were immediately so comfortable with her, and just like the chemistry, I think, between all of us was so easy, and it was like such a pleasure.
Well, and especially with COVID really driving home the small cast and crew, you're only using as many cast members as you need possible. And you mentioned, of course, working with Fran, and you know, now she's an honorary Milwaukee mom and of course a bit of a gay icon. So yeah, was it just, you touched upon it a little bit, but were there any moments where it's just like, oh, this is happening, Fran is my mom?
Well, it's so funny because, you know, I think when we first read the script, we didn't know that they wanted Fran at that point. But admittedly, Fran is not the first person you think of when you think of like a Christmas-loving Milwaukee mom. Yeah. And then when we found out that that they wanted her, I remember thinking like, there's no way she's going to do it because she and I actually have we actually share the same birthday. So Fran has been sort of my celebrity birthday twin, you know, everybody has one, for my whole life. And I knew that we were going to be celebrating, we were going to be celebrating our birthdays right in the middle of filming. And the idea of like, again, this is like, I'm talking about me like in August in the middle of a heat wave in LA in a pandemic, you know, I was like, the idea that a month from now I could be celebrating my birthday on set of a movie that I'm starring in with Fran Drescher is like, it's too good to be true. Mm-hmm. It's never going to happen. And then she agreed to do it. And we were so excited. But it's funny because I remember right before we did the first table read of the movie, which we did over Zoom, I didn't know, like, when she said her first line, if like a Milwaukee accent was going to come out of Fran's mouth, or if she was just going to give you classic Fran, which I am like happy and relieved to say that she gives you the full Fran Drescher experience in this movie that you know and love.
I remember in that table read, it was so funny because we're all on Zoom, so everyone has, you know, you just have the little windows of everyone. A lot of us were staying in this apartment building in Ottawa that she was in as well. And we hadn't met her yet in person. And I remember like she comes onto the Zoom and she's in like a glamorous bathrobe, you know, and she's just lit beautifully. And I'm like, is she in the same building as us? Like, she looks so good.
Yeah.
And I just remember like 30 minutes into the read through, it was her line and she wasn't saying her line. And
we could see she's not looking at the screen.
So everyone looks like this and she's kind of just staring off. And someone was like, oh, Fran, after like a few seconds, like, Fran, it's your line. And she went, oh, sorry. I'm just admiring these flowers that I bought myself. They're gorgeous. I wish you guys could see them. Like in the middle of a table read with, you know, the studio executive, the network. It was so funny. And it was just like, she's just so in her world and it's this wonderful place to be. It's in Fran's world.
Most definitely. And, you know, she gives us full force Fran, you know, throughout the whole movie. And, you know, Lifetime and Hallmark Christmas movies, they're really a genre of their own and they have a big following. There's so many produced a year. Did you both have any impressions of these movies before you got involved in this project? Blake, we'll start with you.
Sure. Both Ben and I, we have to admit, we didn't watch these movies regularly. You know, Christmas is a huge thing for us in our home, and we often go and spend it with Ben's family in Canada. And there's holiday movies in the background, you know, but we weren't people that sat down and watched Lifetime movies regularly. But we did. I think that, I mean, you'd have to be from another planet if you didn't know that it was like an institution, that these films that mean so much to so many people, and that it's this annual tradition that families look forward to. So we were aware of that, but we ourselves weren't fans of the, you know, genre ourselves, but I mean, we are now.
Yeah, I'm Canadian, and they shoot a lot of these movies up there. Mm-hmm. I think most of these movies up there, whether they're set in Milwaukee or wherever. And so almost all the Canadian actors I know, all of my peers have done one of these movies at one point or another. And so I think for me, quite naively, I think when this offer came, I was just like, oh, well, now it's my turn. Like, I'm going to do one of these movies. Because it is sort of just like a rite of passage for Canadian actors. And I never really thought, you know, I think, again, like naively, I wasn't really thinking of the cultural sort of impact or significance of this film. I was just sort of excited to be working. The fact that we're like here and talking to all of you guys and that people are so excited about this movie is not something I anticipated, but like is really, you know, we feel really lucky to be part of this.
Well, and Milwaukeeans and people in the Midwest in general feel pretty excited that, you know, it's a mention in here. And of course, this was filmed in Canada, but do either of you have your own Milwaukee connections or impressions, or have you been to Milwaukee that was a part of this?
When I was in high school, my best friend grew up in the Quad Cities. And so I went to go visit her a lot. And I remember she had family in Milwaukee that we went to go visit one summer, and I just remember being really, really beautiful. Big lake, really cool. I remember this downtown area that was really beautiful with like these like really old movie or theaters, but now I guess they're movie theaters. It was so like the architecture I was blown away by. But one of the things that was really helpful is that Michael Murray, who wrote this film, he's from Chicago originally, and he grew up going to Milwaukee all the time. And he was saying to us that in recent years, going back as an adult, he's found this, he's just been like, it is so progressive. And there's this, it's this community that is artistic and, you know, architecture, like, you know, he was, I think he was saying he was like going on like, it was like something, a Frank Lloyd Wright architectural scout that he was on. And so he just was blown away by this movement of young people that had come back to this city. And so in the movie, my character, Patrick, has made some money in Silicon Valley. He's done well for himself, and he feels the need to come back to his hometown in Milwaukee and help continue the like forward moving motion that the city is going in. And especially because it's personal to his character in a tech way and also in an LGBTQ way. So he opens this incubator for young startups, and you know, our characters talk a lot about the queer movement there and how, you know, in this town there's a queer youth center and there's a drag community, and it's all of these things that Michael Murray, one, was saying that he saw in Milwaukee, but also things that he was hopeful to see, you know, in the future, near future. So he was quite descriptive, and it was very helpful, I think, during the process.
Well, and post-COVID, you'll have to come and see us.
We absolutely will.
Now, with 2020, you know, a lot has happened this year, but it's also bringing a lot more LGBTQ representation to holiday films. You know, Hulu just released their Produce One Happiest Season. Netflix has one out. You know, it's gaining momentum, as you said, and it's great. But the thing that's also really nice about the Christmas setup is that we simply have a gay romance without any conflict or trauma surrounding the holidays. It's just a nice story you can immerse yourself into. You know, the kind of things that Lifetime is known for.
Yeah.
How did you both feel about being able to just be a part of that simplicity and not fall into, like, some of those tropes that is, you know, kind of overutilized sometimes?
Right. You know, like we were sort of saying, because we weren't super familiar with the genre, I think that a lot of my instincts sort of were to sort of see where I could like infuse it with a little bit more angst or a little bit more edge. But our producer, Danielle von Zernick, who's made so many of these movies, referred to herself as the Lifetime police. So if ever we were sort of like getting off message or like the tone wasn't quite right, she would always make sure to sort of like steer it back. But at the same time, I think it was like an incredibly collaborative experience. Like they were very open to our ideas and our sort of like, you know, what we sort of wanted to see from the characters and the story and what we wanted to bring to the characters. So although it does sort of follow the traditional sort of like mold and structure of these traditional Lifetime holiday movies, I really do think that it has like a fresh like energy and of its own. Mm-hmm. So I think I hope that it's the best of both worlds, that the traditional Lifetime audiences will really enjoy it and embrace it, and that hopefully it'll attract some new viewers to Lifetime as well.
We were also recently saying that like the fact that Lifetime did stay in that structure of their films is a statement in itself. You know, it's love is love. This is a love story between two men. That's the only difference about our film, mm-hmm. is that the two people that fall in love are two men. Like it, other than that, it's the same as their, you know, their past Christmas films. And I think that that's really cool and very special. And I think that, like I said, it is a statement that I think was purposefully done. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that, because like all of the stories you were saying that have, you know, trauma in them, gay and, you know, LGBTQ stories, which are very real and need to be told, it's very nice to have a film where you can just escape into an accepting community and accept, you know, a happy ending, you know, this no trauma world. And it's nice. I think in a time like this year, 2020, we are all yearning for that escape, mm-hmm. for that 2 hours of happiness.
With Fran Dresser running about with commentary.
Be better.
Exactly, exactly.
Ben Lewis and Blake Lee star in Lifetime's The Christmas Setup, the network's first film centered on a gay romance, which is also set in Milwaukee. The film premieres on December 12th, and Lewis and Lee spoke with Audrey Nowakowski. And that is today's edition of the show. I'm Joy Powers. Becca Schimmel and Audrey Nowakowski join me in producing Lake Effect each week with help from Jack Urbanis. Becky Mortensen is our executive producer. Jason Reavy is our studio engineer, and Michelle Matternowski is our managing editor. Willie Porter wrote our theme music. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I hope you can join us again Saturday and Sunday afternoon at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. It's 11 o'clock, and stay tuned. Fresh Air is next.